Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Surviving Three Shermans with the 3rd Armored Division into the Battle of the Bulge. What I Didn't Tell My Mother About My War. By Walter Boston Stitt, Jr. Edited by Dr. Jessica L. George. Narrated by Danny Campbell. Prologue. On March 17, 1943, I raised my right hand to swear an oath and became a member of the United States Army. My first official order was to report to the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad Station in Wheeling, West Virginia, to be transported to my induction into the Army at Fort Hays in Columbus, Ohio. A 36-hour train ride from Columbus, Ohio, took me to Camp Polk, Louisiana, for the next year. It was from this new address that I wrote my first letter home. This letter, postmarked May 5th, was followed in the next 32 months by 87 more. Unbeknownst to me, my mother saved them all, numbered in sequence. This treasure was discovered by my daughter, Beverly, during my move from South Bend, Indiana, to Springfield, Ohio, May 2018. Beverly read them all and shared her find with me. After reading the first few, I chuckled. When asked how I refrained from disclosing all that was really going on in those letters, my first response was, "When you're 18 years old, you don't tell your parents everything." This book is the end result of that conversation. Each letter is printed and followed by much of what was unstated at the time. Letters home from servicemen overseas were censored. No location, no unit number, no testimonial to your job. Just talk that reassured the folks back home that you were alive somewhere. You may notice some grammatical errors in these letters. Keep in mind these correspondences were crafted prior to college and seminary, marriage to an English teacher, and writing sermons and articles for publication. Keep listening and you'll know more than my parents ever knew, as I went on to survive the destruction of 3 Sherman tanks, the death of 3 of my crew members, and 2 wounds, plus my beer-drinking prowess. Chapter 1. In Training. Camp Polk, Louisiana. March 1943 to June 1943. My first free ride on the B&O Railroad was from Wheeling, West Virginia, to Fort Hays in Columbus, Ohio. On arrival, I was shown a cot for my stay and told to remain close until tomorrow. Later, an urge took me to the latrine, or what the civilian side still regarded as a toilet. The lack of privacy in what I previously knew as a very private place caused me to pause. 4 fixtures on 3 walls with no separation was a challenge to my dignity. I returned to the barracks. A call at 2 a.m. could not be denied, and to my delight, none of the ceramic thrones were occupied. Day 2 started with surrender of all civilian clothes, which were packed in a box and labeled with the recruit's home address. It was in this advanced stage of undress that the recruits headed off to receive physicals. In the area designed for collecting small urine samples were 2 fellows left over from the previous group, an hour with a bottle in one hand, staring at the wall, and still trying. They were there when Group 2 left, day 1 of their World War II career. Step 2 was vaccination, which was no problem until I found myself surrendering my arms to needles, which some claimed to have been purposely dulled. "Feet in the outline," was the next order, followed by, "Pick up the 2 buckets of sand." This was supposed to reflect what wearing a full field pack would do to your feet. My 9D shoe size became 9E. For the final step, the recruits received clothes. A size 30 waist came out as 32. One can only assume they were anticipating shrinkage when washed. Rolled up the sleeves, rolled up the pant legs. Any complaints? Day 3 was the day I found out about Army Axiom No. 1. never volunteer. A call for anyone wanting to be an MP elicited my quick response. The badge looked good, and I could direct traffic. I found out I could also empty ashes from the barracks' coal-burning stoves, bring in coal, and make a round every 4 hours for the next 24. I learned a hard lesson about Army Axiom Number 1. On day 4, recruits went to the train yard and hopped on the troop transport with bunks stacked 3 high, 1 latrine, 1 water faucet, and a conductor who, for 36 hours, swore he had no idea where we were going. One wonders about me because I was still excited. I described my personality as always wondering what was around the next corner. Who served? On September 16, 1940, while the United States was still at peace, President Roosevelt signed the Selective Training and Service Act. This required the registration of men between 21 and 35 who could then be conscripted. At that time, military service was limited to 12 months. Some 16 million men registered by the end of 1940. At that time, there were 630,000 men in the Army. 6 months later, there were 1.4 million. On August 18, 1941, military service was extended to 30 months, and after the war had been declared following the attack on Pearl Harbor on December 19, 1941, to the duration of the war plus 6 months. At the same time, the age range was increased to those between 18 and 64. The draft continued until 1946, during which time some 36 million men registered, more than 10 million of whom were inducted through 6,000 local draft boards. A significant number of these, around a third, including Walter, volunteered, hoping to choose their branch of service. Letter number 1, May 5th, 1943. Dear Mom, Dad, Dick, and Sarah, well, finally I have gotten time to write a few lines. How do you like my new address? Kind of far from home, isn't it? If you look on a map for Leesville, our camp is about 5 miles from there. This camp is really swell. It is a new one. All the barracks are new and have everything just like home. There is a PX, post exchange, and a movie on every corner. I just came from the movie. If I didn't tell you when I called, my IQ was high enough to apply for officers' training school. We were shipped out of Fort Hays on Thursday about 12 noon and got here Saturday morning at 2 o'clock. We are still going through a lot of red tape, but today was the last, I hope. When I was classified, the lieutenant said the best thing to take up in preparation for OTS was gunner in a tank. This way I get training in guns, motor, driving, radio, and a few dozen other things. When you are reading this letter, if you hear a buzzing noise, it is just a tank or jeep going by, so think nothing of it. We get the best of food and everything cost us less. We have all the sugar, coffee, butter, etc. that we want. Well, there are a million things I want to tell you, but I can't think of them, and as it is about time for taps, I had better sign off. With love, Little Bit Homesick, Walter Jr. P.S. Ask me some questions in your letters so I will get wound up and think of something to say. This was one of my abridgments. Wheeling to Fort Hays, Columbus, Ohio, to Camp Polk, Louisiana. We shipped out of Fort Hays on Thursday about noon and arrived Saturday at 2 a.m. My father, a World War I veteran, was upset that I had volunteered to be drafted and advised me to tell the Army I was a student instead of a truck driver. A funny aside is how I got my job as a truck driver. I told my dad if he would lie about my age by 1 year, I could get a job and he would not have to give me an allowance. I could barely finish my speech when my dad was in the car, honking for me to hurry. So when asked, I obeyed my father. As a consequence of saying, I don't want anything with a steering wheel, when confronted with my resume, I became a tanker. The lieutenant must have had a good laugh when he assigned me to be a tanker. Tanks have levers for steering. Abridged also was the arrival at Camp Polk. I stood first in line to depart the train, followed orders to jump off the last step when the whistle blew. I promptly lit on the soft ground, pitched forward, and landed on my duffel bag. A quick recovery and a dash to the waiting truck. A short ride to another barracks where the bag was dropped off. The food was cold due to a late arrival. However, when you are hungry, a cold meal of meat and potatoes is still tasty. Then it was off to the shower. Orders for the shower went like this. Take off your clothes. When I blow the whistle, you and one other recruit will be under the shower. You have 30 seconds to wet each of you. Then the water is off. Soap up. In 30 seconds when the water comes on, rinse off and put on your uniform. It should be noted that soap does not come off that quickly. Everybody groaned, but got dressed, and was taken to the barracks for a much-appreciated, albeit brief, rest. Having a million things to say was just a filler, but not a fact. The first assignment was to Headquarters Company, 2nd Battalion, 80th Armored Regiment of the 8th Armored Division. My barracks was directly across the street from where the bugler stood at the microphone. This made it quite easy for me to hear the reveille at 4:30 a.m. I just came from the movie was probably something not to write home about. The movie was How Not to Come Down with a Case of Gonorrhea or Syphilis, a rather unpleasant film showing images of people afflicted with the ravages of these diseases. Not something to share with the family. The chaplain had his say, followed by a doctor. Not letting that lie, a World War I veteran, a colonel, had his own version. You'll probably have some whiskey with you. Pour that on your instrument. The look on the faces of the other speakers should have been recorded. They both did come forward and offer their suggestions as a better choice. The doctor suggested a visit to the prophylactic station before sex for a condom or after sex for a treatment. Chaplain suggested keeping the fly buttoned. This event proved to be a source of hilarious discussion back at the barracks. The same colonel was observed out in the field rolling his own smokes from a package of Bull Durham. Word came later the colonel was given his honorable discharge after he was observed urinating off the porch at the officers' club during a gathering to which wives had been invited. This short initial letter contained a wealth of information for my family. I was at Camp Polk, Louisiana, which is about 5 miles from Leesville. My IQ was more than enough to qualify as an officer. I had all the butter I could use. While back home, my mother was squeezing packages that looked like lard. Inside the sack, there was a small red dot, which after much squeezing, looked and almost tasted like butter. The barracks had everything just like home, which translated to running water and toilet facilities. I was going to be a tank gunner, and there were also women 5 miles away, which was important at 18 years old. One wonders what my parents told their neighbors and friends about my early Army experiences. 8th Armored Division. The first years of the war show just how important tanks were. The German Blitzkrieg in Western Europe, the fighting in North Africa, and the Axis assault on the Soviet Union emphasized this. To build up this element of the U.S. Army, the 8th Armored Division was constituted as a training command. From April 13, 1942, it was commanded by Brigadier General William M. Grimes, who outlined the mission as to provide complete cadres, officers, and enlisted men for new divisions. The primary purpose is to train, organize, and prepare these divisional cadres. We are a training division as distinguished from an active division. This continued until March 1943, when the division was transferred to Camp Polk, Louisiana, where Walter joined it with an altered mission. It was now to become a combat unit. In September 1943, it was reorganized to the new Light Armored Division standard to ready itself for activation as a combat unit. The reorganization did away with the regiments and balanced the tank, infantry, and artillery components. Three sub-headquarters, combat commands A, B, and R, allowed role-specific units to be created. As part of this process, in December of that year, in Texas, 8th Armored took part first in the D series of exercises, and then the 6th Louisiana maneuvers in February to April 1944, as are reflected in Walter's letters 42 through 54. During the exercises, the division lost many trained lower ranks to a War Department levy and had to train replacements, more of which arrived on the return to Camp Polk. Training continued in 1944, and inevitably, while it waited for movement orders, the division lost some of its personnel to other units, among them Walter, heading to 3rd Armored. Finally, 8th Armored moved to Camp Kilmer, New York, in October 1944, and left for the ETO on November 6th. Camp Polk, Louisiana. In 1941, Camp Polk, named for the Right Reverend Leonidas Polk, Sewanee's fighting bishop, who resigned as Episcopal Bishop of the Diocese of Louisiana to become a Confederate general, was built on land that had been taken by the government under its power of eminent domain. Some 250 families were evicted from their farms to provide a training area of around 200,000 acres. The camp played an important role in the series of huge Louisiana maneuvers, which had started in 1940 and continued to 1944. The camp continued to be used for training throughout the war, and also housed German POWs. On June 13, 2023, Fort Polk was renamed to Fort Johnson, honoring William Henry Johnson, a hero of the first African-American unit to fight in World War I, who had been posthumously awarded the Medal of Honor in 2015 by President Barack Obama. Letter number 2. No date. Dear family, as you can see, I ran out of ink, and that is not the only thing I need. We are very short on hangers. If you want a list of things to send me, here it is. Hangers, ink, camera, film, for camera. After a while, I will not have to be able to write as often, although we have from 6 o'clock every night till 5 o'clock the next morning. Monday, our training starts. We get 13 weeks of it. After 4 weeks, we are allowed to leave camp, and after 13 weeks, we are eligible for a furlough. Down here, they figure every West Virginian can play a mouth organ or guitar, and that they all carry guns. Most of the West Virginia fellows lead them on and tell them about snake soup, etc. In case I didn't tell you last time, there is a camp, South Camp Polk, 5 miles from here, which is full of whacks. They come over for dances, shows, etc. You are allowed to date them if they are the same rank as you. They just blew the whistle, so I have to go. We'll write again later. Walter Jr. P.S. Don't send candy or anything burdensome. Bye now. Did I really expect my mother to send me hangers? She did send a Kodak brownie box camera, but pictures from the camera proved to be very scarce. Upon arriving at my barracks, I was asked where I hailed from. My West Virginia response brought an, "Oh no, not another one from West Virginia." In the barracks were a number of men who had been there for a time. One of these men was a bedwetter from West Virginia. After the full complement of men arrived, there was an assessment of those who needed to be seen by the professionals, that is, doctors or teachers. The issues for referral ranged from not being able to read and write, complaints of flat feet, need for treatment of syphilis, and bedwetting. So off went our bedwetter for treatment. The cure for bedwetting was reported as 2 bedwetter partners, one bunk bed with a thin mattress, and one night on the bottom and the next on the top. Somehow the urine shower was grounds for a cure, or so the story goes. On a regular schedule, we were told to take our mattresses to the rear of the barracks and air them out in the warm Louisiana sun. When the day's activities ended, we came to attention on the company street and were dismissed for the day by an order to fall out. With our mattresses out back, there was a mad scramble to grab the best-looking one. Everybody ran, except one, who could walk slowly back later to get his yellow-spotted charm. I learned the hard way that not feeling well was not a reason to stay in bed. The first sergeant came looking for me when I missed reveille and found me, a young recruit, lying in bed. Inquiring as to what I was still doing in bed, I told the sergeant I didn't feel well. The first sergeant promptly picked up my mattress and dumped me on the floor. Sick call is at 0800. Until then, report for reveille. Funny. I never did make it to the sick call later in the day, as the anger healed whatever ailed me. These early days were not easy for new recruits. I found it boring, the hours after hours of repeatedly going over the same commands as we learned how to left face, right face, about face, attention, at ease, and parade rest. Here, an earlier problem arose. Some recruits had trouble deciding quickly which was left and which was right. Even an exasperated sergeant with colorful language could not effect a quick cure. Attempts were made, like carrying a brick in your left hand. For those whose reaction time to commands was slow, the answer was classification to orderlies, or permanent KPs. This letter closed with a mystery. What in the world did I expect my mother to send that would be burdensome? How about hangers? The Army did supply hangers, and there was an open area to hang clothes in the barracks. During basic training, everything was inspected, even how our clothes were ironed and hung. I wasn't looking to get KP because there weren't enough hangers. Letter number 3, dated Wednesday night. Dear family, well, here I am again, writing letters after lights out. Boy, am I naked. My hair is a half inch long. That's the cowlick in the back. And I shaved off my mustache. Only officers are allowed to wear mustaches. I got a slight sunburn Sunday. It's no wonder the temperature is about 100 all day long, and we drill and have classes right out in the open. Boy, I really like it here. Most of the fellows don't. To me, it seems pretty good. We don't have any hills, but there are plenty of trees. Last night, the whole 8th Division went to a big show. They had Wax there who danced with some of the fellows. The show was okay, till I turned my ankle. Finally, I got to the place where I could walk on it. Then, to top it all off, I sprained it again about a half hour later. They had to carry me to the medical jeep, and I got a free ride to the dispensary. The doctor gave me some Epsom salts to bathe it in, and they rode me back to the barracks. This morning I went to get it bandaged, and they sent me to the hospital to have my eyes examined. Sounds crazy, don't it? But that's just how damned mixed up it is. When I got back to the barrack again, I went to the doc to have ankle bandaged. This was about 11:30, and he said to come back at 4:30. I told him to go, and then went back to my company and began marching. It is now about 2 times as big as it should be, but I'll be damned if I'm going back to the dispensary. Today I drove a jeep with a bad ankle. I climbed all over it first like a baby with a new toy. Yesterday I was all over a medium tank, inside and out. Boy, are those things put together. They have from 2 to 3 inches of steel armor. If you have not sent it, do not send the camera. We are not allowed to have one, so I found out. Well, I only have 3 months and 3 days before my basic training is over. After that, I go one maneuvers for about 3 months. Boy, do they have maneuvers. Some members of the infantry came back. They have been gone since January 12th. They have taken no baths or showers except in creeks. Off the record, I saw 4 stiffs come in today. Well, I have to get up at 4:30, so I'll sign off now. Love, Walter Jr. P.S. Airmail gets here about one day sooner. Here's an explanation of my address. Line 1. Blank. Line 2. Headquarters Company. 2nd Battalion, 80th Armored Regiment. Line 3. Army Post Office, 258. Line 4. Blank. Line 5. Blank. Line 6. Blank. They did me a favor by making me shave off that mustache. It was really scruffy. My next testimony to liking Camp Polk was not an option shared by many of my fellow trainees, as I indicated. In fact, complaining was a part of the daily barracks discussions, and you would have to have some sympathy for a fellow from West, by God, Virginia, who missed being surrounded by hills. My other West Virginia buddies and I wondered how you could go to school for 12 years and not know that Roanoke was not in West Virginia. The often given response to your disclosure about hailing from West Virginia was, "Oh, I know somebody in Roanoke." My family doctor in 1934 was a very likable 85-year-old practitioner who had known my family for years. Behind his back, he was called the Epsom Salts Doctor. Epsom salts for sprains, Epsom salts for upset stomach. You name it, Epsom salts could cure it. So it would come as no surprise to me that warm water and Epsom salts would be the treatment for an injured ankle. Even at Camp Polk, I could not escape the time-honored remedy I had come to know so well. It stretches the imagination that I, a buck private, would tell a doctor, who would have been at least a captain, to go to. As we know, "Yes, sir," is the more acceptable reply. There's a story that goes with classes out in the open. A lieutenant with a pointed stick was going over and over the action as the bolt goes forward in a Thompson submachine gun caliber 45 M1A1. I went to sleep, sitting in the hot sun. Startled awake by hearing my name loudly called, I correctly responded, "Yes, sir." I promptly denied being asleep, whereupon the officer had me stand up, come forward, and explain to the class what happens when the bolt goes forward. I got it exactly right, but I wasn't out of the woods yet. "I know you were asleep, twice around the motor pool," barked the lieutenant. A long jog beat sitting through one more round of "What happens when?" If anything, I loved being in a tank. I shared the American belief that American steel, American knowledge, and American craftsmanship had built what had to be the world's best. A little over a year later, I would learn otherwise. I did finally grow out of starting sentences with the word "boy." Tank crew personal weapons. The official weapons were the M3 light tank mounted 145 caliber Thompson SMG at the back of the fighting compartment. The later M5A1 had a new turret, and the Thompson mounting moved to the top of the radio in the turret bustle. Around 500 rounds of 45 caliber ammunition were carried. The M3 medium had two mountings for 45 caliber Thompson SMGs, one under the bow MG's left of the radio operator's seat, and the other at the back of the fighting compartment. 1,200 rounds of 45 caliber ammunition were carried, along with two M2 tripods. These were outside the tank for use when the bow machine guns were dismounted. The M4 medium tank, Sherman, mounted one 45 caliber Thompson SMG on the top of the radio in the rear of the turret, with 600 rounds of 45 caliber ammunition, 4,750 rounds of 30 caliber, and 300 rounds of 50 caliber ammunition were also carried. Two tripods were provided, one for the 50 cal M2HB AAMG, and one for a 30 cal M1919A4 MGs. All of the tanks also carried a number of hand grenades. The M4 medium had 12, two smoke, two thermite grenades in a box on the left side turret wall, two smoke, four M2 fragmentation, and two...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?